Today we have Jacob Garza on the show. Excited as Jacob is going to talk about so many things. He's going to share the importance of hiring a mentor. He's also going to share how he networks and learns from so many others in masterminds and otherwise. He's going to talk about how he focuses on operations and he focuses on the user experience. He's going to talk about how they implemented a way to go paperless. He and his wife have done over 10 multifamily deals for over 2,000 units, and they are just a class act.
Before we jump into the intro, we recently launched a YouTube channel. Some people love podcasts, and some people love videos. If you have interest in videos, check us out and subscribe on YouTube. Just look up Darren Batchelder in the search field, or click the YouTube link on either the DarrenBatchelder.com website or on my Instagram bio. Now, on to the intro.
Welcome to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show. Each week, you will learn how to grow your wealth through real estate investing, be introduced to the players that are getting it done, and learn how you can get involved. And now, here's your host, Darren Batchelder.
A little background on Jacob Garza before we start the show. Jacob lives in San Antonio, Texas with his wife Arlene. He built and sold his tech company and took that capital and started a multifamily syndication business with his wife. He focuses on the operations and his wife focuses on acquisitions and financing. They are upscale and classy in everything they do. They are one of the largest multifamily owners in the San Antonio area, and they show no sign of slowing down. Now, on to the show. Hello, everyone. Today, we have a very special guest here with us today. We have Jacob Garza. Jacob, I appreciate you coming on.
Darren, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So a little bit on how I know Jacob. So I joined a multifamily mentorship group about 3 years ago, and Jacob and his wife are business partners, and they just, when I joined the group, they just had an incredible reputation within the group and were kind of the leaders, you know, in the space in our multifamily mentorship group. So when I started putting capital to work, these were some of the people that I wanted to do business with. And so one of my early passive deals was with the Garza. So I am very interested in hearing what he has to say. I'm always interested in learning from the two of them. And once again, Jacob, I appreciate you coming on. First question typically I ask is, how many properties and how many units are you currently invested in?
Well, yeah, thanks, Darren. And it was probably 2.5 years ago since we first met. And you've certainly known us for a while. To date, we have just over 2,000 units in our current portfolio and just over 1,000 passive investments that we have as well.
Fantastic. So another interesting thing about the deal that I invested in with the Garzas, you know, I was getting into a number of different passive deals. And so I was investing for different reasons. I knew I wanted to be an active syndicator. I wanted to learn from some of the best. And so one of the things that I did was my criteria. I looked at, one, I wanted to do business with the Garzas. Secondly, I wanted to get into a large unit deal. And the deal that I got into with them was a 2-property portfolio. I'll have Jacob share a little bit more on that deal. But that also was the first deal that I've had that has had any type of exit strategy. So Jacob, if you could talk a little bit about that deal, you know, some specifics on the deal, and then also talk about how long you've had it and what the exit strategy was.
Sure. It was a two property, as you mentioned, portfolio here in San Antonio, about 260 units or 460 units total.
Small deal, 460 yeah. units.
Yeah. And by the way, I think this was probably our 10th purchase. And we've been doing this for a while. And I'll get into the story of how small we actually started. But yeah, this came to us, and it wasn't marketed through your traditional direct mailings, but they did put an OM together, and they had interesting marketing. They had four or five brokerage houses each selling this portfolio. So we were approached by one of the groups out of Austin, and we were able to take it down, if you would. So
that was two properties, and it was 400, you said 60 units?
Yes.
460 units, and the purchase price was, what was it? I can't recall. What was the purchase price?
Yeah, $40 million.
$40 million. So the capital raise on that was quite a bit. What was the capital raise on that?
It was almost 20.
Almost $20 million. That's a huge capital raise. What was the biggest capital raise you had before that?
That's it. And that's the largest one we've done to date.
And before you had done the $20 million, what was the largest
capital raise? 11. 11.
11. So you almost doubled it. You know, I do want to go back to some of the earlier ones because, you know, the listeners, I bring on a lot of people like yourself that, you know, have 2,000-3,000 units and, you know, you're doing a $20 million capital raise. And some people that are listening, you know, that's the path they're on. They already have a few deals and they're trying to scale up. But then there's others that they're just trying to break into the space. And sometimes it could be intimidating, like, you know, holy cow, these people have 1,000, 2,000 units. I can't ever see myself having that. But it all starts with one, right? It all starts with one deal. So your first syndication deal, what did that deal look like?
Yes, that was in 2012, almost 10 years ago now. And it was 24 units here in San Antonio.
Wow. That's a big difference. So what was the capital raise on that one? Or you remember.
Yeah, we did it ourselves. It was about $110,000 and it was $500,000. So $21,000 a door.
Yeah, it's crazy. So a number of things have happened over the years, right? The price per door has gone up. So the basis has gone up. So the capital raises are bigger. But what's important is, you know, everybody starts somewhere. So everybody has to take action. Everybody has to. And then what seemed, if you think back to that deal, like I'm sure there were scary things about that deal. Now, if you were to do another one of those deals, it would not feel scary at all because you're doing $40 million deals. But you wouldn't have gotten here had you not done what you did, you know, with the starting out.
Well, and you just touched on a point. I think people have to decide they want to do real estate and get into real estate. Had a previous background building technology companies. So I was somewhat used to kind of stepping out of my comfort zone. But this was real estate. And what I found was no matter what business experience I brought to the table, the lenders really didn't care. I mean, they cared, but they really needed a sponsor, someone with experience. Even if this was a recourse bank loan that we took, and they still wanted a sponsor. So, I think for your listeners, the people who've decided they want to get into real estate, there's three things that I will say to that.
Yeah.
One of them is get a coach, get a mentor, get someone who has a genuine interest in wanting to see you succeed. The second thing, and educate yourself. I mean, those go hand in hand. They're not going to spoon feed you, but they will give you guidance and an advisory role. And if you get them to sign on the note with you, that's even better. The second thing is you have to go through all the steps. There's rings that you have to climb the ladder, and that's pick yourself a mentor that's going to shorten, to flatten your learning curve. Do your homework, make offers, get out and talk to people. So that's just going to help you get there without missing all the steps. You're going to have to miss out on a couple LOIs. You finally get an LOI, then you're in. But prior to that, the other one is if you can do this full time, my belief is that the time to get there was going to be less. And if you have more money, if you have a significant, somewhat net worth, my belief is, I think you're going to find yourself a little more successful to a syndicator who wants to align themselves with you and says, geez, okay, this person, maybe they run a business, they've got a balance sheet, and right, they're in it full time. They're learning. Look at this gal's on fire. That couple, all that together is going to get you a deal. And it's not to say, we've seen it, Darren, these people who've had full-time jobs, they're sponsors and they close deals. So that's certainly not a prerequisite, but you certainly have to go through the steps though. And more time and more money, I think you get there.
I think you hit on some great, great points. I mean, one, and I don't hear enough people talk about it, is the word that you use, decide. Like, if you are listening and you're reading books and you want to do multifamily, there's a difference between I want to do multifamily and you make a decision that you will do it. Because to your point, even if you join a mentorship group, you're going to have to get out there and hustle. You're going to have to build relationships with other partners. You're going to have to build relationships with the brokers. You're going to have to build relationships with passive investors. But it's all doable. And you also said you got to go through all the steps. Like, I remember, you know, people have asked me, like, what's the scariest step? I'm like, they were all scary, you know, all like they were all scary, like the first time. But now I look back at some of them and I'm like, why was I scared of that? Like, you know, but first time going through it, you're going to have that fear. So I completely agree with you. And the other thing you said about, you know, hiring a coach or a mentor is, you know, you could probably do it without it. You definitely can do it without it. But most likely you're going to shrink the time frame between start to finish, you know, if you hire somebody to teach you the ropes. So I think that those are great points. Going back to, you know, the deal that I'm in, where we just had an exit. So, you know, when I think of exit strategies, I think of either a sale or a cash out refi. And in this instance, there was a cash out refi. So kind of explain, one, from a, you know, lead syndicator standpoint, what was the review analysis as to, you know, cash out refi or sale? And, you know, you decided on the cash out refi. What did that look like, you know, for investors?
Yes. So going in, and you're right, Darren, going in, we had a plan to do a sale or a refi in anywhere from 24 months to 36 months. And we bought the property on bridge debt because it was underperforming, which hence the value capture in the future. The properties did well, even initially. They cash flowed well, and we decided to take out a loan, or to refinance the property, to retire that bridge debt and put it on agency debt. And really, we lined up both scenarios and presented it to our investors. And overwhelmingly, they said interest rates are at, and they were, you, they're at very low right now. And I think we closed on it was probably a 5% interest rate interest only bridge, and we the new debt was 3-something. So that just made a huge difference in our debt service, and the property is just doing extreme. Both of them are doing extremely well. So that just allowed us to almost have an. It really wasn't a decision. We all had to decide what to do. But when you lay them out in front, you know, one piece of paper versus the other, we certainly could have sold it, but the properties have so much more upside. Our investors said, "What are we going to do with the cash?" I mean,
right.
You know, and I'm going to pay taxes on it. Then where do I go? This property has a lot of life in it. We pulled out enough money. We're doing a second rehab on it, and we're doing a second cost segregation on it. And, you know, it was tax-free that we were able to pull out. So that was nice. And it was 40% of their equity we pulled out. So, you know, that was the decision was typically the property performance will dictate your decisions moving forward. I've been in enough deals, even our passive deals. It's hardly ever a, you know, two horses that are close. What do we do? It's typically one that ends up being the front runner. And in this case,
makes sense.
Yeah, in this case, it's exactly what happened.
So you said something that I would imagine that the refi opportunity is more attractive when there is either additional value add opportunities where you can improve the property and increase rents in some way, or that you just see that the market is going to continue to run in that submarket. And, you know, for that reason, the valuation should continue to increase. But, you know, as an investor, I want to say thank you, because I'm in like, 11 deals or something. And that was my first deal that has had any kind of exit strategy. And that was, less than 3 years. I don't know exactly the time frame, but less than 3 years. And, you know, I'm getting 40% back of my equity. Some of that is being held until, because the, you know, for the listener's perspective, you know, with COVID, a lot of the lenders are having these principal and interest holdbacks. And so they put aside a bunch of money into reserves. They're using COVID as the reason to do that. And so we did a cash out refi. A portion of it they were able to, you know, release to investors, and a portion of it is sitting in this reserve account. And then I don't know when is it 12 months later or 11 months later?
It's 12 months.
12 months.
Or when they officially say the pandemic is ended.
Oh, gotcha.
Whatever comes first.
So one of those two reasons. So that's fantastic. And, you know, going from a few things on the loan side on that for the listener's perspective. One is, if you're looking at a deal that has occupancy of less than 90%, then you're not going to qualify for an agency loan. So you're either going to have to get a bank loan or a bridge loan. So in this case, the Garzas looked at, you know, the deal was in the 80s occupancy wise. And so they thought there was a good opportunity to bring that up. And so then they looked at both bridge and bank loan and decided on a bridge program. And then within the 3-year window, they refied into an agency loan. They were able to take the interest rate down from 5% to 3% plus. And that dramatically changes the debt service. So the, you know, you're paying X amount in interest and principal. Well, it was interest only, right? So in interest, and then all of a sudden you refi at a much lower rate, and now your interest payment is significantly reduced.
Less than half.
Less than half. Oh, I like
How's
it.
How's that for cash flow?
Yeah. I like it a lot.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
What was the term on the agency loan?
The term was interest only for 3 years with 2 1-year extensions. And the payment on that was like $150 a month, and now we're about $65 a month. Significantly different.
And that was on the bridge bridge loan that 3 years right. for two, but the right. agency loan that you just closed on, what's the term? Is that fixed for X period of years?
There were two properties. I always get them confused. One of them was agency step down, and the other one was a Freddie floater.
Gotcha. Yeah. And the terms on them, 5 year, 10 year,
were the actual seven. One was okay. seven, and the other one was 10 with a step down.
Gotcha.
One things that we've come to know is, you know, putting long-term debt kind of constrains you if you want to sell a property. So the properties we're buying today are refinancing today. We can put long-term debt on them. We're just wanting to make sure that year 3, 4, and 5, if we need to get out, there's not a big, huge prepayment penalty. Right. So that's one of the fundamental changes we've made to our strategy.
So a lot of syndicators got caught, you know, they put a 5% loan on, 10-year fixed, 12-year fixed, and then all of a sudden rates drop into the 3% range, and it's a very attractive seller's market, but a lot of the gain would get gobbled up through prepayment penalty. So one of the things that from my other business that trades loan portfolios, where I saw people get hurt in the last downturn was when their loan comes due, maturity risk, when their loan comes due in a poor economy and maybe cash flow goes down, cap rates go up, and the valuation is negatively impacted, you're forced to either sell or refi and you don't have leverage. So I'm a proponent of the floater, but I like having a longer term on it where, all right, even if it's going to hurt me, you know, from a debt service standpoint, and it's going to float up, you know, as interest rates go up, if I can make the payment, at least they can't take the property from me. Right. So that's something that I look at, but that's something that new syndicators, some of them just don't focus on, you know, the exit strategy enough and what type of financing to put on the deal. That's very important, understanding the prepayment penalty and how that's going to impact you.
Yes, no question.
So what about inflation? What's your view on inflation? Like, there's two kind of schools of thoughts that are going on today. Is one, the Fed saying they're going to keep interest rates low for an extended period of time. You know, and others are saying, well, you just put $4 trillion into the market. You know, how can you not have inflation? So what's your viewpoint there? This is just a personal view. I mean, obviously, sure. None of us has a crystal ball.
Sure. And that's probably a better question, probably for Arlene to answer, like you introduced her, my business partner and wife. You know, I try to focus just on the X's and O's of the asset management and the operations part. I know that's something we can control. And what you're talking about is very valid, and it's something I think all syndicators should watch, because it may be time for you to get out of something if you feel like there's going to be some inflation around the corner, because that's going to wreak havoc on, like you just said, a lot of people are going to get trapped. I know she's watching it very closely, so she'd probably be the better one to ask about that one.
Yeah, so I'm going to have Arlene come on the show. We're going to do an episode with her, and I'll focus on that piece with her. So that leads me to the question on, how do you guys divide up duties? One, you know, there's not a lot of marriages that people can work together, you know, and have it work out, but you guys seem to do it just fantastic. So how does that work from a personal level? And then two, how do you kind of divvy up, you know, responsibilities?
Sure. Like anything else in life, you know, you get on a bike, you fall 3 or 4 times. So did we when we first started doing this. We never worked together in our professional careers up until 2012. So what we learn, the short answer is just divide and conquer. She'll repeat those words. She handles the broker relationships, the acquisitions, all the debt. She's very good at it. She's a banking business background. And for me, I handle the asset management and the operations as a solid line between myself and our vice president of our property management company. For you viewers out there, we do own our own management company, and that's how we've operated since day one.
Since day one. Oh, so I thought it was when you started to scale up.
You're right. We started a management company, and that's when we joined the Sumrock Group. Gotcha. And he actually gave me some advice. Look, you're in that 300 area. You should go third party. So we went third party to about 1,000 units. Gotcha. And then we went up. We did keep a small property by ourselves, but that's why I consider we've been doing it for 10 years property management wise.
So you were in technology before. You were building software companies or hardware companies or what?
Yeah.
What type of technology?
Yeah, it was software. And The last company I had was called Property Automation Software. And our product was called Tenant Pro, and it managed properties for apartments and small commercial buildings.
So you knew the space. How did you get into that space if you weren't in the investment world?
Yeah. So the story is back in 1990, a lot of software was licensed to big marketing companies because you had a lot of software developers that would develop in their garage, literally, and would not have a marketing arm. So I worked for a software company that had a marketing arm, and we would have exclusive rights on people's software. We'd market them and sell them, give them 5%, 2% royalty, whatever it ended up being. Well, they decided one day to discontinue the software. And the guy who I knew, he worked there, they ended up bringing him into work to fix the program and bugs, said, I'm going to go back to California. I said, no, you're not. We're going to start a software company.
Nice.
So that's how I said, you keep handling the programming and I'll do the sales and marketing. And we grew it to, he left about 5 years later, but I grew it to 21,000 installations across the United States.
Wow.
And had over 100 employees when I sold it. And I was a sole shareholder in 2007.
Very nice. So one, great timing, before before everything tanked. Two, sole shareholder, you probably made out pretty well on that deal. And then you have all this cash, you got to do something with it. And that's when you decided, hey, let's start buying investment properties.
Absolutely. Yep.
Sure did. Absolutely. That's fantastic. Now, why? Like you were in Dallas, right? So why move from Dallas to San Antonio?
Yeah, grew up there.
You grew up in San Antonio?
No, in Dallas.
Oh, okay, in Dallas.
Grew up in Dallas, and we both have family here in San Antonio, and our kids were still small, so it was just a good time. If we were thinking about making a move at all, we just make the move. So we did.
Very cool. So I get different trade publications, sent in the mail, commercial real estate. And every now and then I see these listings that come out, and I'm sure you guys have seen it. Who are the players that own the most multifamily units in San Antonio? And your guy's name, the Garza's name, is always on that list, as one of being one of the top owners, and that's got to be feel pretty good. I mean, you guys came a long way in a short time frame.
Yeah, I haven't seen that list, but yeah, we've been doing it for a long time, and we had a lot of things go our way, and you just can't give up. I mean, you just have to, like you said earlier, it's once you've decided, it's perseverance and getting the right coaching. I'll say that's probably the biggest thing, is it just flattens the learning curve. And the mistakes today that you make in this business, my belief is they're much harder to recover today than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And Darren, you're in the space, you know what I'm talking about. So getting someone who has been through the ropes and can teach you this, and surrounding yourself with people who you can ride the coattails with, is the way to do it. And, you know, as large as we are, 2,000, we still look up to other people who've got 3,500, 45, 10,000 units. And I'm riding their coattails. I'm asking them what they're doing.
Exactly. So the decimal
you know point what? Just There's, moves over.
That's what's fantastic. There's always somebody that's doing, you know, ahead of you that you can be learning from. And, you know, there's a certain point where, like, it doesn't have to be, people get to a certain point where you don't necessarily need it for the financial, but look, we're all on this earth and, like, why not be productive? You know? So if you may have enough money to be financially free, but, like, who wants to go just sit and do nothing and then waste away? Like, be productive and, you know, give to charities and, or do other, you know, have an impact on other people's lives. And so, I applaud people that, you know, they reach a level that they could just cash in, but they choose to keep giving back. And, you know, not everybody looks at it that way. Some people may look at it like, oh, they've got so much, why are they going for more? Well, you know, they're creating more jobs. They're helping other people come in. They're taking investors' money and they're providing fantastic returns. So there's a lot of different reasons why. You brought up mentorship a number of different times. And I know that you guys see value in it because you've been in the mentorship program for a long time. And you guys are leaders in that mentorship program. And you mentioned two things. One is, you know, getting coaching and shrinking that time frame. And then the second piece is really surrounding yourself with like-minded people. And that, to me, I didn't even really realize how important that was going to be and how much of an impact that would have on me. But all of a sudden, you know, being surrounded by hundreds of people that all they want to do is, not all they want to do, but they're focused on investing in large scale multifamily. And there's not just one person to ask, you know, there's all these people to ask, like, who do you use for property management? Who do you use for attorneys? Who do you use for the, like, that shortens that time frame dramatically because, you know, there's a comfort level that all these other people have used these vendors. They've got skin in the game. And so that provides a lot of comfort level for somebody new. And then secondly, you brought up, I don't know if this is the right word, but I don't think you can win a deal if you don't partner with somebody that has experience, you know, in today's market. So where do you find those people and where do you build those relationships? And it was just a natural component in the multifamily mentorship group.
Sure. There's a couple, I'm going to answer that in a couple of ways. You know, there's a lot of mentorship groups out there. I can think of probably four or five that are out there. I only have experience with two. And so my advice would be for your listeners to go to them. Shouldn't cost you much to go to their introductory. Now, it will cost you to sign up for their mentoring package. But initially, go and attend their weekend or their evening. Spend 5 or 6 hours with them. What I would do is go talk to them. Because I can tell you, the membership that's actually there is who's leading the group. All these groups are led by one person. And that'll tell you right away, you know, the DNA, if you would, the composition of the group. And the characters almost match exactly. So that's what I would
do. Great, great, great advice. So, you know, the group that Jacob and I belong to is a group based in Dallas, the Brad Sumrock Group. We've both had very positive experiences. I've met some great syndicators in plenty of other groups as well. And so I think that's great advice is to, you know, one, you know, contact the group, but go attend an event and meet, you know, some of the people that are there and get a feel for, you know, the experience level and the types of deals that people are actually doing. You know, some people may be wanting to do a 20 unit deal, and maybe one group is better for that. And, you know, another group is better for, you know, 100 plus unit deals, or, you know, everybody kind of says that they're, you know, national, but you know, certain groups are more highly centralized in certain areas. So that could be a determining factor as well.
Absolutely. And the information, as you already mentioned, you get it from the group, you get attorneys, you get vendors, you get lenders, you get so many people that can help you. And it just, here's a perfect example. We're in a deal, and we had a conflict of our attorney. So we had to find another one. So I put out a couple of feelers. We interviewed three of them, and one we're going to end up using. But the other two basically said, yeah, I've done a couple of Fannie Mae loans, you know. And it really, he didn't really do that many, but he sold it like, oh, a contract's just a contract.
Right.
And I can assure you the nuances of a Fannie Mae PSA is completely different than a strip shopping center or something else. And if we didn't know any better, we've done 16 deals so far. If we didn't know any better, we probably would have said, yeah, he's a likable guy. He can do it. And I think you're going to end up getting out negotiated and potentially sign up.
So you asked somebody and they kind of pointed you in the direction of the one attorney that had the experience.
Yes. Eventually we got somebody who really has the experience, but the interview process, one didn't have the experience, but said, you know, PSA is a PSA. I can negotiate right. It. And there's so many nuances with these contracts. You really need somebody who's done, or with a firm who can learn the nuances of a PSA when you start negotiating under a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan.
Absolutely. So a couple other scenarios that play in there. One, you said, you know, you were really looking to start your property management company at 300 units. And then you got counsel like, look, you should probably wait till you get to 1,000. And you didn't only get the counsel, but you thought it through. And look, you were already a business owner, sold your, you know, multiple businesses for profits, and you listened to that advice and you took it. And so that's something, if you were on your own, you may not have, you know, had that advice given to you. So you might have just stumbled along the way.
Darren, you're exactly right. Cause I hadn't seen it up until then. And there's no factor that would have led me to believe that wouldn't have continued if I wouldn't have heard that advice. So you're right. And I got that from Brad.
You've had the property management company for how many years now?
Let's see, 2015. No, 17.
So good four years.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I know it was on your mind the whole time. Is it because you're an operations guy that you wanted it, or was there other reasons why you wanted to have your own property management company control?
Well, I'll add to that. I wanted to control the user experience. And I've always believed if you take care of the ultimate end user in any business, and the ultimate end user is who writes your checks, who pays for your services.
The tenant,
it's
renter.
The tenant. Right. Right. So when I go on property, or now our VP of ops goes on property, we're so aligned. If she wants to make a change, she can make the change on the spot. There's no policy, there's no board, there's no corporate. Anything we can make changes on the spot, and it's for example, we made the initiative in 2019 when she came on board to go everything electronic. All of our leases, applications, all through DocuSign. We're paperless. All of our custom forms
from the tenant all the way up the. Everything that they have to do that is paperless?
Everything. Driver's license they scan in, the community rules, any addendums. Of course, the TAA lease is pretty easy to do, but you have to all the other forms that you have that that you, you know, you, did I get the sign off for my, did I get my keys? Did I get this? You want to have them sign that when they come pick it up. All that's customizable and on DocuSign now. So we're completely paperless when it comes to the application and the lease process and the lease addendums and all the custom forms.
That's awesome. So have you received feedback from tenants that they like that?
They love it. And if they
love
if
it,
they love it. It's mobile friendly, and they can also do it in the office with us. They can sit down and type that through and accept the lease or put in the application.
What about, you know, payments? Do they have to do online payments through with you guys?
I love that question because everyone used to tell me we have ACH and everybody would come in with money orders. Everybody, and they're not the same. ACH is electronic funds transfer, right? And it's a little more sophisticated to use ACH. You have to have a checking account. You have to know how to go on a portal. And people still like to pay with money orders. At least in our space, they do.
Right.
So in 2019 as well, we launched the initiative that now our residents do the same thing when they get their money order. They go to HEB, Kroger, Tom Thumb, Ace Check Cashing, all the places, like 10 places they can go to. And they give them the cash, but instead of getting in the money order, they get a receipt, because at any one of those places, it automatically goes into our property management software. So,
oh, really? So they're, so they're still going into those locations, they're paying, but instead of coming back with a money order that you have to take and deposit, they receive a receipt and then you get the money the next day.
Right. And they're done. They don't have to, they don't, exactly. And they don't have to say, I'm heading to your office. I just got my money order. I'll be late.
Right.
None of that.
Yeah.
It's over. And
so it's a convenience for the user, and it gets the money in there much more efficient from your standpoint also.
Yes. Yes.
Now I have to imagine that you wanted to have the user just do set up their bank account in your system and have it be automatically withdrawn the first of the month. But
yeah, that's been around for 20 years. You know, ACH, it's been around forever. My software, we had it.
Right.
It doesn't solve the cash problem. The money order problem doesn't solve it. And check scanners, we got rid of all that. You come in your office, the check scanners, we got rid of all that too.
So, but you're still seeing pushback from the tenant that, hey, I don't want to put my bank account information in there and have it withdrawn. They still want to make the decision when they have the cash to go and get the money order rather than have it be automatically pulled out of their account every month.
Right. And we're not seeing pushback. They just like it. They really like it because they don't have to come back to the office anymore. They can do it whenever they want to.
Right.
24/7, Saturday, Sunday. They can make a payment at 10 locations.
How did you do that with all those different providers? Did you have to work with each of those providers?
It's a HEB feature.
And
yeah, it's a feature from our property management software that we use.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And that's another thing. As I mentioned, the experience, that's been around for not a long time, but a lot of management companies don't offer that. They're just, I guess they're too busy. I don't know why. Maybe they don't have skin in the game. I don't know why, but I am always looking to create an advantage for our management company to service our residents better. And I do it from an asset management, from an owner's perspective. But I'm also not trying to tell our management company what to do. Believe me, they do it much better than I could. Our leader's been doing it for 14 years. And she's out of a company out of Austin that's been doing it. She had 14,000 rental units. And she came to work for us because she saw the great things we're doing and where we're going. But some of the low-level things, the nuts and bolts, let them do it. But some of the strategic things that really impact the business that I feel like I can provide or reach out to somebody else in Brad's group or whoever's group that they're doing, that we try to help each other and say, how do we make our management companies better? And sometimes these leaders, these management companies, they don't have the bandwidth to think outside the box, if you were just quiet time to think, how can I make my management company better? Because the business by itself, management is a tough business.
It's tough.
I'll just say it. Yeah. Okay.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is. It is. So we feel like as a team, we really have moved the needle on our management company, and we are so much better at acquiring. Well, we're so much better at taking over and operating properties than we started just 4 years ago. We're so much better, and we're getting better, you know, every day. And I think some of the latest results have shown that. So we're always trying to get better every day.
That's awesome. And you're right, though. I mean, look, everybody, I don't know the person that manages your management team, but look, she's got a directive, right? She's got, you know, goals and KPIs she has to hit, and she's focused on that. And that's what keeps her thinking. And sometimes she just doesn't have the time to think of the outside of the box things. And if you could go to a conference, or you can go and meet with other syndicators that are, you know, further ahead than you are, and you could take ideas and present them to her and, you know, hope that she grabs on to some of them and runs with them. That's fantastic. And you're the only person that I've talked to so far that has used the terminology user experience. Like, and you said it, no matter what business you're involved in, if you could satisfy the end user, you're going to be successful. And, you know, most of the time, myself included, when people talk about multifamily compared to, say, single family, you know, the benefits are you can scale, you know, rather than have 10 single family houses, you could do 100 or 200 unit deal. You could have on-site staff, third party, you know, property management staff. And then, you know, it's a little time consuming getting the deal done. And then depending on what the rehab is, maybe the first 6 months of rehab, but then you can kind of let them manage the day to day, but they probably don't have the same mindset as, you know, you as owning your own property management company that is completely focused on the user experience. I would imagine a third-party property management company is, and I don't know if this to be the case, but focused on hitting certain hurdles to make the owners happy and the investors happy, and that helps them get other deals, you know, and may lose sight of the actual user experience.
Yeah, I think that's true. And for example, when we get a deal under contract, our entire company knows about it. And to help drive the business plan and to help drive the vision, every time we go on a property tour, we take our VP and a construction CapEx person with us. So as they're hearing the vision from the story and why it's for sale, and as we go back to the office and put together a business plan for it, and as we march through the PSA, right, through rate lock and closing, they've already seen the property three or four times. They've already met with staff. HR is completely engaged, you know, 4 weeks before to make sure we're going to take over the property day one fully staffed. Our marketing director of marketing is involved day one of the takeover, even before the takeover meeting. So I think that to drive that user experience, the only people who can drive it are the employees.
Right.
And I think the earlier we get them involved in what we're trying to do, the better. And our equity companies right here, our management companies right here, we don't look at them any differently. And today, it is the decade of the management company. You've heard that thrown around, and it's true. And it's, you know, it takes both sides to make these deals work, and an asset manager who knows how to hold the reins, you know, just right. You know, You don't want an asset manager go beating up on anybody, trying to tell them what to do, and they'd be there every week. At the same time, they need guidance. And it's kind of like saying, the manager company is going to drive, but I'm going to ride shotgun as the asset manager. Just make sure you don't hit anything, and you know, make sure our research and ongoing analysis of the market is in line with what you can do as an execution.
That's a commitment also, because there are deals that you go after that you don't win, right? Or do you win every deal that you go after?
Oh, no. Yeah.
So that means that, you know, you're pulling resources onto, other opportunities that may not come to fruition, but it sounds like you have the buy-in from all the people in the other divisions that they want to participate, and they look forward to, and now everybody's on board when you guys pull the trigger.
That's right.
That's awesome. Why do you like multifamily and not other asset classes?
I've come to find out that two things are going to happen when all hell breaks loose. People are going to put food on their table, and they're going to pay their rent. They may not make their car payment. You know, they may not make their office payment. You know, their mini storage, and then they may not go on vacation. But I can tell you, they're going to pay their rent. But initially, I mean, I had some experience with the space through my property management company, our property management software company.
Right.
And, you know, I thought, oh, let's just go in apartments. And Darren, there was nothing special about it other than I liked it. And I always felt like I'd have a management company. I kind of felt like I liked the team building part of that. But other than that, there's nothing significant that drove me to it. So
listeners, I want you to know something, like, how far these guys have come, because he said he started with a, you know, like a 20 unit deal, 24 unit deal. And, you know, when I got into the space, as I mentioned, they're leaders in our group and just, you know, so far ahead, they've done, you know, now they've done 10 or 11 deals. But if you go around to a lot of these, coaches and mentorship programs, they have big events and they have, you know, big bus tours and taking you out to properties. And all of a sudden, like I saw these guys were, Jacob and Arlene were setting up their own event down in San Antonio. They were setting up bus tours to go visit the properties. Like, they are not only investing in the user experience for the consumer, for the tenant, but they're also investing in the networking and the building of relationships with investors. And I was very, very impressed with, you know, their conscious effort to build those relationships.
Yes.
So you guys made a decision to do that. That was different than what anybody else is doing.
Yeah, we just decided it would be an opportunity to get a lot of investors don't live in San Antonio. We have 8 properties here now, 9, I think. So it really gave them a chance to come together, and a lot of them know each other. And it gave them a chance to do two things: hear from industry leaders, and what you're referring to is REAPCon. And REAPCon, we did that in 2018 or 19. And we had some really good speakers. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, I think ours was one of the first that we brought someone from Fannie Mae to speak out of New York. So I mean, they were the black hole. No one knows who they are. So we actually was able to, through our
relationship. Everybody gets loans from them, but through other parties, and nobody knows who they are.
Yeah. So it just gave everybody a chance to come and learn the San Antonio market, drive their assets that they've invested in that they've never seen before, because no one really gets to San Antonio. So we felt like if we could give them a full day of CoStar, you know, people speaking, and some others that we had, and then some dinner afterwards, that it would just help build camaraderie and get to know us a little bit better. And I think it turned out really well.
I enjoyed being there, and I walked away thinking you guys are a class act. Like you guys did everything top notch, and you know it. You know the actions paired up with the reputation that you had prior. So it was a nice event for me to attend and feel good about investing with you guys. What do you do outside of work for fun?
Oh boy. Okay. We are fortunate to be part of not only Brad's mastermind, but a few other masterminds. So we actually like hanging out with people who do what we do, even if it's outside of what we don't do. So we travel three or four times a year, which is maybe a little more, but other places. We're in Dallas all the time. But so we certainly enjoy that. We have two kiddos, and one is actually working with us now. And
awesome. What side of the business?
On the acquisition side.
Okay.
Yeah, she ended up, she got her master's in London with nutrition. She went to work in Miami and decided, well, I'm not really like this space, this nutrition space. So she went to work for a group out of Miami that as an owner manager for 2 years, and now she's working with us. So that transitioned very well. You know, aside from that, we just enjoy being home and having people over and building relationships. That's pretty much what we like to do.
Awesome. Awesome. What's the next big stretch goal for the Garzas?
Yeah, so I think we're going to keep doing what we're doing. I've been a business owner, fortunately, and I've seen a lot of people get really good in year 5, 6, and 7, and we're past that. Something magical happens when you get past 10 years. You really grow up. It's like turning 40. You know, when you turn 40,
you know, I'm 50.
Yeah. Yeah, so you've had 10 good years already. That's right. You know, when you're mid 20s, you don't know anything. When you're 30, you're just getting your legs. You know, you're really starting to hit the corporate stride or wherever stride. Then your 40s, then you get it all together. You know, you're mature. You've got some wisdom. You're making some money. You know, you've been around the block. So that's where I kind of like to say after 10 years. So we're just looking forward to finishing out this year really strong and moving up. Perhaps some ground up development is within our reach as well. But in the meantime, we're going to stay focused on what we do well and deliver what we can to our investors.
So you brought up ground up development. I'm going to hit up on that just quickly. I've seen in the last year and a half, kind of a transition from a lot of syndicators that were buying BC, more focused more on kind of trading up to B+, A type product, and also some starting to look at, you know, ground up development. And, you know, some of the reasons that I received from different syndicators was one, you know, if I could buy at the same, not the same, but just a little bit more, you know, ground up, then it makes sense. I have less maintenance on the, you know, and then on the ABC side, you know, people saying that, well, look, it used to be you buy an A for, you know, say 5.5 and then a B for 7 and a C for, you know, 8, 8.5. Well, now it's really compressed and you're almost on top of each other cap rate wise. So why not, you know, buy a better asset? So what's your take? Is that one of the reasons why you brought up the word ground up, or is it just, hey, try something new?
Well, we've been actually approached by several people. I think they're looking for, you know, some experience on the debt side, somebody with a balance sheet and someone with a management company. We would only speak with people who were interested in a long-term hold with that, because that's how we would, you know, go through this whole process and and keep it. So, but those have been the initial talks with us. It hadn't been many, but we've been approached several times. But, you know, we have to have the bandwidth in order to do it, and we'll see if we can't make that happen. If not, we're going to stay focused on what we're doing.
And you guys have transitioned from, you know, when you started out, you guys were trying to figure it out. And now, like, you're the senior players, so you have other people that are actually going out and finding deals. And then they're coming to you guys, just like this ground up opportunity, and saying, hey, look, we've got this deal. Would you partner with us and be, you know, our experience, our, you know, our balance sheet, you know, help raise some capital, and possibly use the property management company. So, how is that transition from you going out finding the deal to having somebody else kind of be the boots on the ground and then bring you guys in?
Yeah. So, we purchased our first property in Houston in 2018, 2019. And we, met, Mo and Samantha Hashem through the Sumrock Group. And they live there, and he's got a very successful flat fleet landlord business. He manages single-family homes for lots of people in like five different areas of the country. So there were a lot of synergies we had between us, and it is hard to get into Houston until we meet someone like Mo and Samantha. And that really gave us a leg up with our experience here, but he was there. So those two together.
It was a win-win.
Thank you. Yes, it's exactly how you look at it. And we were able to get our first property. It was in 6 months. We closed on it. And now we'll soon be closing on our fourth property in Houston. Another couple, Jaime Gonzalez and Hua Wen. I mean, we're going to close our third deal with them.
Fantastic.
Now. So, yeah, if they align, you know, together, partnerships obviously work. You know, everybody brings something to the table that the other one doesn't have. So, those things do work out for us.
Fantastic. And then, hey, Jacob, how do people reach out to you if they want to get to know the Garzas more?
Absolutely. Best place is email. You can just email. It's my name. It's jacob@jacobgarza.com.
That is pretty simple, guys. Listeners, especially if you're in San Antonio and now Houston, these guys are a class act. They know what they're doing. They are in it for the long haul. They treat their tenants fantastic. They treat their employees fantastic. They treat their investors fantastic. So get to know these guys. I hope you enjoyed that one. Until next week, signing off.
Thank you for listening to Darren Batchelder's Real Estate Investing Show at darrenbatchelder.com. If you liked the episode, please provide us with a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast platform of choice. If you already provided us with a 5-star review, then thank you, and please share the show with a friend.